It is working out.
Hi, so ladies and gentlemen, today we're going to talk about approach to the patient with chest pain. And of course, we're going to be focusing mostly on these infarcts, but I hope to go over some of the other syndromes that can cause chest pain. And then we're going to do a number of different kinds of EKGs associated with chest pain syndromes, as well as going over the protocols for managing these two major causes of chest pain. I must tell you, this is absolute a culture shock for me, because this is the first time, I must tell you, in over 40 years of presentations here, this table has been horizontal instead of vertical. 40 years the table has been lengthwise. 42 years.
You like it better?
Well, if it works, it works. I mean, whatever works, that's good. At any rate, okay, first one. So you know, with the acute coronary syndrome, we're dealing with a huge burden on our healthcare system. And notice that the unstable anginas and the end-stemis represents about 4/5 of the load compared to ST elevation infarcts. So as the ST elevation infarcts get to have all the glamour and the nighttime revascularizations. But in fact, most of these cases are unstable angina and end stemis. And you know, there's been just changes in the usual evolution of these things. When we have the people coming in with non-acute coronary syndromes, but without ST elevation, non-ST elevation acute coronary syndromes, that usually includes the unstable anginas and the end stemis, non-ST elevation MIs. Now, the difference between this and this is in the chemistry, of course. The difference between the unstable angina chest pain and STEMI chest pain is the fact that this group has normal cardiac enzymes, and this group has troponins and CPKs, especially troponins. And you should know that, and you're going to see it, and certainly in your lifetimes, I've seen it many times in my professional lifetime, and that is that we're developing more and more sensitive biomarkers for muscle damage. So as we develop more sensitive ones, we're going to be moving more patients from the group that we're calling unstable angina into the group that we're calling end-stemi. So when I was in your position, the test that we had were the white count and SGOT and LDH. And then about 20 years ago, the CPK became available, and we started using that. In the past 10 years, as you know, troponins have been available. And you know that in the next 5 years, there'll be other markers that are bound to be even more sensitive. So we're going to end up kind of shifting more of these persons, chest pain and a coronary syndrome, but that we're calling unstable angina, we'll be calling them end stemis, just because we'll have a better marker that there's been some muscle damage. And typically, if you think of it, the group which are non-STEMIs usually go on to a non-Q-wave infarct. But some of these non-STEMIs will actually develop Q-waves. And conversely, many of the ST elevation ones will go on to Q-wave infarcts, but some of the ST elevation ones will not develop Q-waves, will be non-Q-wave infarcts. They'll have just ST and T changes. Hey, there's a lot more chairs here. Maybe we could make them available to more people. Somehow like that, like this. Good. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. So, first, I just want to remind you to open up your thinking. And it's all too easy on the inpatient service where you are now to accept the diagnoses of sent up from the ER, that someone has come into the ER with chest pain. It's been labeled as an infarct or a non-ST elevation infarct or ST elevation infarct, and it's too easy to fix your mind and say that's what it is. And we have to keep reminding you to try to keep a fresh approach. And despite the fact that the ER says that maybe it was an infarct, it may not be an infarct. And remember, there are a lot of causes of chest pain, many of which have EKG changes with them, but which aren't infarction, are other conditions, and where you've got to get them right. So, of course, you know about pericarditis and how it can produce ST elevations. Acute pulmonary embolism never fails to fake us out in terms of chest pain, shortness of breath, and EKG changes. Pneumothorax can look a lot like pulmonary embolization. Chest pain, shortness of breath, and that EKG, the famous S1Q3T3, remember that just represents acute right heart strain. So while a common cause of that to happen freshly is pulmonary embolism, you can get acute right heart strain with pneumothorax. Remember, if you drop a lung, that's going to increase pulmonary vascular resistance, and that's on that side, and that can produce an S1Q3T3. Aortic dissection is another fake out. And what we usually think of it, of course, is the pain here, you know, radiating through to the back of a catastrophic tearing nature. Sometimes it's not quite so typical. And sometimes it's non-radiating chest pain. And sometimes it's hardly any chest pain at all. And there may be EKG changes with it. And often there are enzyme changes, especially CPK, can bump up with dissection, as some of the para-aortic and mediastinal and the paravertebral musculature gets damaged by the dissection, that can bump up on the CPK. GERD and esophageal spasm, typical chest pains, with radiation to the jaw, even radiation to the arm, that can fake us out. Pneumonias above the diaphragm can have pain in this region. Musculoskeletal strain we see all the time, fractured ribs, and herpes zoster, but I mentioned premonitory herpes zoster. And anybody can recognize zoster once the rash is there. But remember, patients who are developing zoster may have pain, neuropathic pain in the region before the rash appears. So all of these are things we're going to consider. So let's take some of these typical ones first. So let's take this case example of a 52-year-old man who presents with 2 hours of chest pain, which awaken him at 5 a.m. There's a history of smoking and increased cholesterol. There have been some premonitory symptoms in the past 2 weeks. And when he's in, his blood pressure is normal. His heart rate is 84. He's diaphoretic, and he's got chest pain. Chest is clear, and the heart has an S4. And this could be a lot of things, such as infarction. Next slide, please. Now, this might be the ECG found in such a situation. And notice a few things about it. For one thing, of course, you recognize the prominent ST changes here. Both STs and Ts are up. And this is one of the tombstone patterns that we're used to seeing. And it's in 1, AVL, V2, through actually V6, these prominent STs and Ts. But notice, here's a person coming in with pain for just 2 hours. This is the hyperacute pattern. And notice, even then, hyperacute, there's Q waves present. So the Q waves the presence of a Q wave don't mean that it's a, quote, old infarct. Q waves can be present even from the get-go, even from the beginning. What helps with the timing is the shape of the STs and Ts. And here, when both ST and T are elevated, that's the pattern of hyperacute injury. And usually that's the phenomenon of the first 12 hours, usually. And usually helping support that diagnosis is what you see in lead 3. And it doesn't happen all the time. But usually, with an anterior wall infarct, obviously LAD territory, usually with these, you get some reciprocal ST depression in lead 3. Some people say that indeed, if you have an anterior wall hyperacute infarct like this, and the ST is not depressed in lead 3, then that suggests that you're dealing with what is called a wraparound LED. Wraparound. So not only is it producing injury of the anterior wall, but as it gets around the apex and a little bit inferiorly, it's producing a little, quote, inferior ST elevation, which kind of neutralizes the reciprocal ST depression and will kind of mask the ST depression. But this is a typical pattern of hyperacute anterior wall MI. If this man went right to cardiac cath, as he should, under the current approach to these, he should go to the angio within 90 minutes. This is what we might find. So this is a left anterior oblique view, left coronary artery injection. Here's the circumflex artery. And LAD should come down like this. And you can see here's the proximal cutoff. And this is the famous widowmaker, or the proximal LAD occlusion infarct. Well, we have some other patterns to show you also. Of course, what's going on in that, I'll remind you, is that if this is one of the vascular trees with atherosclerosis, if we think of this as just think of this as left main from here down. And if we were to think of this as LAD, here, of course, there's some atherosclerotic plaque. This one looks as if it was probably about a 60%er to begin with. There's been a crack in the plaque, and I hope it's showing up well enough to suggest that there's thrombus in here. But remember, the ones which crack and produce the thrombus are sometimes 80%ers, and sometimes 50%ers and 60%ers, and sometimes even 30%ers can do it. So it's not the 90%ers necessarily which produce the infarct. Although it is the 90% which produce chest pain on exertion. But in terms of infarction, as you know, it may have been just a 30 or 40%er as well. And this is here's the pathology slide through one of the through one of the acute occlusions. So here's a vessel. Here was the lipid core. This is the fibrous cap. You can see there's been a crack in here, and there's been some clotting here, and actually some blood oozing back into here. But this is thought to be the mechanism of acute infarcts. And here's another view of it. So here's some plaque, crack in the plaque. Exposure of the blood components to the lipid core, and we're getting a platelet aggregation and then a thrombus formation. So here are some other patterns. For instance, here's a man with chest pain for 2 hours, and he has this EKG pattern. So you recognize a few things. One, ST elevation in the inferior leads. It's an acute inferior wall MI. Not exactly Q waves, but awfully lame R waves here. These are virtual Q waves. Not quite, but they're pretty close. Very lame R waves here. We've already lost R wave down here. And notice these changes. So this is not unusual. This person has an infralateral infarct, and notice a reciprocal ST depression in V1, V2, V3. Reciprocal to some posterior, probably to some posterior elevation. Or acute infralateral MI and concomitant anterior ischemia. It's hard to tell the difference. Hard to tell the difference. Often what we'll do in this case is get an echocardiogram right off the bat. Because we'd expect to see inferior wall akinesis. And it'll be interesting to see what's happening in the anterior wall. If the anterior wall is moving well, then we would say this ST depression is just reciprocal to the electrical elevation in the inferior posterior leads. But if there's anterior hypokinesis, then that's going to suggest concomitant anterior ischemia plus the inferior infarct. that particular pattern could show up with this angiogram. And there was a person who came in with an infarct, and here, this is his right coronary artery. Here's the posterior descending. Here's the right. And here's a 80% stenosis right here. Next. Here's another example. This person having chest pain, and 72-year-old woman. And she, when she comes in, it's already, she has significant Q waves, ST elevation, evidence of an inferior wall infarct. But she has this stuff. And this you recognize as prominent R waves, V1, V2, and V3, an ST depression. This is probably reciprocal to an infra posterior infarct. And remember, when there are posterior Q waves, ordinarily we don't put leads on back here. We could, but ordinarily we don't. So if a person has a posterior infarct with Q waves, that shows up as anterior R waves. So here they are. So the reciprocal of this would be Q waves and ST elevation in the posterior leads. So this person has an infra posterior infarct. And her angio was this one. She had a circumflex occlusion. So remember, when people have inferior infarcts is due to RCA occlusions about 80-90% of the time, and to circumflex occlusions about 10-15-20% of the time. Now here's another pattern. Any volunteers want to suggest about what this could be? This man had an MI a year ago. And this is a routine clinic EKG. He's not having pain today. And he's been doing well in the past year. And this has been his EKG in the clinic pretty much for the past year. So let me see, do we have a PGY 2 or 3? Okay.
So there are Q waves in V1, V2, V3, and V4. So you probably had an and V5 and V6 maybe.
Oh yeah, right, a little bit. And certainly here, sure.
And seems to have, so he had the past MI that caused the Q waves. It's not having, but he does have some ST, or at least the Q J point elevation.
Oh, it's more than that. It's really elevated too.
Yeah.
Asymptomatic in the clinic. MI a year ago. No fever, no cough, nothing. Right? So we have a person with a Q wave infarct and persistent ST elevations for a year.
Yeah, it's most likely a repolarization of lombalgia
or LV aneurysm. Could be, right? And in fact, this is the pattern very suggestive of an LV aneurysm. So here's a picture of it. Now remember, in this case, I think they're trying to show is that the cutoff was here of his LAD. He had an anterior apical infarct, and now it's an aneurysm. So LV aneurysm is this bulging, leathery kind of thing, unlike the other aneurysms that you and I have learned to be fearful of in terms of arteries, which may expand and rupture. LV aneurysms do not rupture. They develop, in the early phase, certainly there can be ruptures of an infarct. But once it develops this aneurysm stage, that's pretty leathery, and it does not rupture. It can produce arrhythmias. By being akinetic, it can produce clots. By being akinetic, it can lead to heart failure, but it doesn't rupture. And back up the slide, please. So the EKG of LV aneurysm is evidence of a Q wave infarct and persistent ST changes. And the ST elevations, in fact, let's back up a couple more. Right, that's a good one. The ST elevations of acute infarcts usually are hyperacute for about 12 hours and then start coming over like this, but almost always settle down within about 10 to 12 days. So when you have a Q wave infarct and ST elevations which last more than 2 weeks, you can pretty much guess that this person is developing an LV aneurysm. Okay, we can go forward again. Okay, next one. Okay. These are going to be some other slides from our patients here. Here's a 68-year-old man who had chest pain for 2 hours, and he had right-sided leads done. So remember, right-sided leads, with the right-sided lead, you take the limb leads in the usual way, but then you put the suction, the stickers on to the right chest. So what is this trying to tell us? Here, in his standard limb leads, we have profound ST and T elevations, typical of a hyperacute inferior wall infarct. And notice, really, he already has these little Q waves. I told you they can happen very early. And then these right chest leads were done. Now, what is this trying to teach us? More PGYs, twos, threes. A what?
ST elevations in V4R is an RV infarct.
Right. So what we're looking for, and you must do this, whenever persons have inferior wall infarcts, you must obtain right-sided chest leads, looking for RVMI. RVMI. And the finding that we look for is ST elevations in V3R and V4R of at least a millimeter in those leads. And V4R is really the money lead for this. So this is the pattern of RV infarct. And I think the next slide would go with this. Yeah, that's it. Good. And, for instance, this would be seen with a person who has a very proximal RCA occlusion. So remember, it's the right coronary artery which comes down and perfuses the inferior posterior portion of the left ventricle. But when it's very proximal like this, then it picks off the RV branches as well. So you get a right ventricular infarct as well as left ventricular inferior infarct. And this is what I would expect to see with that particular EKG. Okay, some more examples. So again, this is reminding you now of the differential diagnosis of ST elevation infarct. And this isn't just the cause of chest pain. I showed you that broad list before. This is a differential diagnosis of chest pain and EKG abnormalities with ST elevation. So this is EKG focused. So pericarditis can do it, some atypical anginas, early repolarization, WPW, T-wave changes suggestive of CNS lesion. I'm going to be showing you some examples of these. LVH with strain, Brugada syndrome, myocarditis, hyperkalemia, bundle branch blocks, vasospastic angina, and hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. These can all have EKG abnormalities with ST elevation infarct, with the ST elevation, I mean, which can fake us out. So remember that if you see any of your patients in clinic who have these chronic conditions and abnormal EKGs with them, you really can do them a favor if you give them a copy of their EKG to keep. And if you can reduce it on the Xeroxes, that would be a good thing too, so they can carry it with them. Because a copy of an old EKG in these conditions is invaluable if these patients ever show up in an emergency room. and especially if they're traveling, and I try to do that when my patients have abnormal EKGs and are planning a trip, I try to remember to give them a copy of the EKG to take with them. Because, for instance, and we've had this happen, where people are traveling overseas, let's say away for a week or 10 days, with a few days in this city and a few days in that city, and had a little funny chest pain, showed up in an ER. And if they happen to have an abnormal EKG, that might be kept in the ER to, quote, rule out MI for 2 or 3 days out of a 5-day trip. It would really wreck the trip. Whereas if they had a copy of their EKG with them, they can kind of show it to the team in the emergency room to show that there are really no new changes that might allow them to salvage their vacation. Well, let's see some of these examples. Next one, please. So here's a woman, a 55-year-old woman with a history of a dilated cardiomyopathy. And she had some indigestion or other funny chest pain. So this was her EKG. So what can we squeeze out of this? All right, we need some volunteers, other volunteers. PGY2s or 3s? Anybody? 2s or 3s? Other 2s and 3s? Should we try some 1s? Okay. So, PGY1, please.
Old MI with single Q waves in B1 to B, up to B3.
Yeah, right. Very poor progression. Is that what you're suggesting? Is that what you said?
Q waves.
Well, not right, but it's not exactly. But they're itty bitty R, very small R waves, though. So that's true. Good. What else can we see? Anybody else, just for other components, then we'll put it together.
Looks so, like a complete left bumper branch.
Okay.
And also ST depression from the 5 and 6.
You said incomplete left bundle.
I'm sorry, it's more than 0.12, so it's complete.
Good. So in fact, we have a pattern of, very good. So we have a pattern of left bundle branch block. And here's a person with some very atypical chest pain, I said indigestion-like. And here, this is a typical EKG of left bundle branch block. And remember, with left bundle branch block, you get these discordant STs and Ts, that is, discordant to the QRS. So if the QRS is up, STs and Ts come down. When the QRS is down, STs and Ts go up. And this is typical left bundle branch block. And especially when the rate starts to go faster, the people with left bundle will elevate their STs over here. So I don't know if this person has left bundle branch block and anterior ischemia, or just left bundle branch block with exaggeration of their ST changes. Now, this, by the way, is has proved very challenging for our interventional cardiology team. Because, as I hope you know now, in the city of New York, when the ambulances pick up someone at home with a chest pain syndrome, they're doing EKGs on the spot. And when they spot ST elevation, they're phoning into the ER and they say, ST elevation, am I coming in? And by the current rules of the Department of Health and in the city of New York, the cath team has to be prepared to get that person into the cath lab and have the balloon inflating within 90 minutes of contact. 90 minutes. And in fact, if the time is greater than 90 minutes, the hospital is being cited by the Department of Health. So everybody is now very sensitive to responding very quickly when there's ST elevation infarcts. So this means that the interventional cardiologists on call are carrying special beepers. The fellows have the ST elevation MI beeper. So that when we get the call from the paramedics that such a person is coming in, the nurses are already called, the techs are already called, and the lab is ready to go. However, left bundle branch block is a nemesis. It's a challenge. Because what they're finding is, indeed, when it's left bundle branch block, most of which are old, most of which are due to hypertensive or degenerative heart disease. And what they're finding is, when they're worried about a hyperacute anterior wall ST elevation infarct, what they're finding is that the vessels are open. And so they're getting very circumspect, when in fact it's a left bundle with ST elevation infarct. The team is not, they're not mobilizing all the nurses and techs to come in. But in fact, they're having the fellows kind of check it out, get an echo, see what's happening in this wall. And if there's hypokinesis, then they get the team in. But in fact, if the anterior wall is moving, then they're just going to say it's left bundle alone. Because time after time, left bundle with this pattern is proving to be not acute occlusion. Sometimes it is, but most of the time it's not. So here's ST elevation due to left bundle. Next example. So here's a student with chest pain for 2 days. PGY1. Somebody?
Pericarditis.
Why do you think that? Good.
And you should see PR depressions as well, which I don't.
Yes, you do.
Oh, okay. So yeah.
Yes, you do. So in fact, here's a young person with chest pain. But usually the story is a little more helpful than that. Like he's had a fever for a couple of days, symptoms of a respiratory infection, and the pain has some pleuritic features to it, but not always. Sometimes it can be relatively acute. Anyway, notice what's going on. ST elevation, 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 little elevation, elevation, elevation. So we have diffuse or universal ST elevation, very suggestive of pericarditis. And this is exactly what you're referring to, and that is that there's PR, where the QRSs are up, we're getting PR depression. And where the QRSs are down, we're getting some PR elevation. And this is very typical of pericarditis. And remember, that will evolve, so that in a couple of days, these T waves might come over. There'll be ST elevation, and the T waves may come over. But remember, pericarditis never produces Q waves. It can produce a bump in troponin, but it never produces Q waves. So you have to be alert to it. On the other hand, listen, you guys. So you guys know we're working in the Bronx. Part of our catchment area is the South Bronx. 26-year-old people coming with chest pain may unfortunately have other syndromes. And we've had people like this coming in with, of course, cocaine-induced infarction. But again, cocaine infarct could look just like this in the anterior leads, but I wouldn't expect ST elevation in the inferior leads. So infarct, spasm, cocaine-induced would be regional, like anterior leads only or inferior leads only, but shouldn't be universal like this. So keep your guards up. Next one. Here's another young person, and he's had some chest pain one day after wrestling. Any suggestions? No toxic habits. No fever. Kind of hurts up here. So it could be hypertrophic obstructive. It could be.
Juvenile pattern, young guy. There is a pattern, ST juvenile in young. Usually ST elevation, that can explain that.
Right. And this is the pattern that you're alluding to. of early repolarization of healthy young persons. And it's usually healthy young male persons. So men show this much more so than women. There's real differences in repolarization in men and women. For instance, normal QT interval is longer in women than it is in men. It just is. And young women can have persistent juvenile pattern of T-wave inversions, V1, V2, V3, into their 20s. Men don't. And young men can have this pattern of early repolarization, which is usually in a cluster, like here's lateral cluster. And you can see we're up about 2 millimeters above the baseline, which is the PR segment. And a typical feature of this early repolarization of healthy young people, which is probably found in half of the males here. A typical feature is that while the ST is up, the T wave is always robust and about 3 times the height of that. So that if the ST is up 2 millimeters, the T wave itself is 6 or 7, about 3 times that height. Very typical of early repolarization of healthy young people. Just like that. Okay, good. Let's see if there's another one. Oh yeah, this one happened. So here's a guy who, really fit guy, he was an athletic person, wanted to join the police academy. And they turned him down. And they said, in fact, they turned him down based on this EKG and the appearance of Q waves or virtual Q waves. Want a PGY1. Anybody want to volunteer on this? Yes, why do you say that? Excellent. And which is what he had. So here's a short PR interval. Notice the P wave is abutting on the QRS here, 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 and here. In fact, everywhere. So short PR interval, the widened QRS at the base. .12 wide at the base. And of course the delta wave. So here it is, here it is, here it is, here it is, delta, delta down, and it's the delta that's giving this Q wave phenomenon. So this guy in fact had normal heart muscle function, but he had Wolf Parkinson white. Now what's being done, so what's being done nowadays, remember, when we're picking this up in young people, is that we're often ablating them, even if they don't have a history of tachycardia. Because you don't know whether they're going to have tachycardia, some of which could be dangerous. Conversely, if you pick it up in someone certainly into middle age or older, because he's still young, but certainly into middle age or older, then that person has already told you that he's had 40 or 50 years of not having tachycardias. And often we won't ablate those guys. But in children, they're ablating the asymptomatic ones.